on April 10th. Today we are joined by Representative Ledoux, Representative Drummond, Representative Peggy Wilson, myself, Representative Gaddis, and Representative Reinbold. On our agenda today, we'll be hearing House Bill 197, and in an hour, hopefully, we'll get to Bill 189. So we'll begin with 197, and if the bill sponsor and or their staff would like to come forward to present the bill, we're ready.
Madam Chair, I will go along with my aide, Lisa Vaught, and initially introduce her, and then I'll come back up to my seat, if that's all right with you.
And for those listening, that would be Representative Ledoux speaking.
Which verse, A?
Madam Chair and members of the Education Committee, my name is Representative Gabrielle Ledoux. I represent Muldoon and Elmendorf. I'm introducing House Bill 197 for your consideration. This legislation seeks to establish a reading program in school districts for grades K through 3. According to a study by the Annie Casey Foundation, literacy in third grade affects the chances that a student will graduate from high school. It is imperative that we take action to make sure that Alaska's children can read at grade level or above by third grade. This bill requires regular assessments to identify students who are not at grade level and to remediate the deficiency as quickly as possible. Additionally, this bill provides early notification to parents and information on how they can assist their child. HB 197 also provides for retention in third grade if a student does not meet the required minimum reading standards. This would eliminate social promotion and make it literacy-based promotion. I would now like to introduce my aide, Lisa Vaught, to tell you more about this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lisa Vaught, staffer Representative Ledoux. I'm presenting House Bill 197 for your consideration. This legislation seeks to require the establishment of a reading program in school districts for grades kindergarten through 3 and for student retention in grade 3 if a student doesn't meet the minimum reading requirements standards set forth by the state. Based on an analysis of reading scores and graduation rates over 10 years, students who could not read by the end of third grade were 4 times more likely to drop out of high school. Of those that dropped out, 88% were struggling readers in third grade. The social impacts and cost of low graduation rates are profound. Research shows a strong correlation between dropping out of high school and lower lifetime income, higher use of public assistance, and higher incarceration rates. Estimates on the total lifetime cost of society for each new cohort of dropouts accumulates into hundreds of billions of dollars. Reading is key to closing the achievement gap. The analysis found that differences in reading achievement explains differences in graduation rates between students of different races and ethnicities. Poor African American and Hispanic students who are struggling readers are about 8 times more likely to drop out of high school than proficient readers. Conversely, proficient third grade readers of all races graduate at similar rates. 89% of economically disadvantaged students in the study who achieved proficient reading skills by third grade graduated. Alaska, according to the National Assessment of Education Progress, or NAEP, data, rates near the bottom in fourth grade reading scores. In 2011, only 25% of fourth graders in Alaska were proficient or above in reading by national standards. Children who fail to learn to read by third grade can recover and catch up, but it is a very painful and resource-intensive process. It's clear that we need reform in Alaska's education system. If we continue with more of the status quo, we will continue with the same results. HB 197 seeks to put in place a literacy program in school districts around the state. This program requires regular reading assessments of students beginning in kindergarten, participation in statewide assessments, elimination of social promotions, and it provides for retention of students in third grade who are not reading proficiently. Many Alaska school districts currently engage in the practice of social promotion. This means that children, regardless of academic abilities, are passed from grade to grade simply to keep them with their peers. However, each year, many of them have failed to learn basic literacy skills in the developmentally critical grades. Rather than addressing these problems, a social promotion simply moves these students to the next grade level. This is especially destructive for children in the early grades. Learning to read does not get easier with age. As a result, illiterate third graders move on to become illiterate fourth graders, and then fifth and sixth and seventh graders. Third grade is the year that students transition from learning to read to reading to learn. Imagine a fifth grader reading on a second grade level, sitting in a science class. These students will not grasp the vocabulary and the scientific concepts described in the textbooks because they cannot read, literally. Grade level materials keep increasing year after year, but these students cannot keep up because they cannot read. These students have been described as disruptive, restless, and bored. They often do not finish school, let alone go on to college. We must take steps to change this outcome. Several states have implemented literacy-based programs. Actually, 13 of the states have implemented literacy-based promotion. One of these states is Florida. I'd like to point you to the document provided this morning called Florida's Education Revolution. Florida uses the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test to measure student progress. There are five achievement levels, and level one equates to functional illiteracy. On page four, there's a graph showing the percentage of students retained the first year the policy was implemented. You will notice that there was a steady decline in the number of students retained and a steady decline in achievement level one, which is functional illiteracy. Florida's reading scores have drastically improved since the literacy-based promotion was implemented. It was combined with regular assessments, good reading instruction, and intervention in grades K through 2, monitoring programs, and a parental involvement component. Holding back a child is not an easy decision, but the alternative is to move them ahead and hope for the best and then watch them struggle. We can do better for our children than that. We do not help our children by passing them on without the skills to become successful adults. I've heard it said on numerous occasions that our children are our future. We pour money into education so we can train the leaders of tomorrow. Let's make sure that we give them the tools to be successful. Let's make sure they can read. Let's close the achievement gap and give as many students as possible the chance to succeed. HB 197 seeks to do that, and I urge your support of HB 197. Thank you.
And do we have any questions for the bill sponsor? Thank you very much. Is there anyone from the department who would like to come forward and testify? And we see the commissioner coming forward. Sorry, I didn't see you there in the back.
For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the commissioner for the Department of Education. We do recognize the importance of reading by third grade. The one thing I think that would be important to recognize here is that we do have a zero fiscal note because the fiscal impacts to the state are, there aren't any. But the fiscal impacts to a district to implement this are significant. So I would anticipate when I look at the things that are required here, and they're very positive intervention strategies to make a difference in the lives of kids, They require additional resources to implement these things. Some of the things that are put in, which are positive, that states that a district shall do, the optional transitional grade, supplemental services, extended time, smaller student-teacher ratios, extended day, year, summer camps, things like that, all very positive strategies. I would just ask the committee to consider that if this were to go through without support for a district to implement this, it may be very, very difficult. It would be an unfunded mandate for a district to implement these strategies without the support to do so. So I am not speaking against this by any means. I just want to recognize that the zero fiscal note does not represent what it will take to implement the strategies here.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So evidently, Mr. Commissioner, evidently then you're saying schools aren't doing these things now?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think a lot of the schools are doing several of these things. They already have reading programs. I would believe that they should be diagnosing their students as well to understand where their deficits are. Are they putting in place a transitional grade to fourth grade? Probably not. Are they mandating longer days, longer years, summer camps, smaller class sizes? No.
Follow up.
Just my main concern is, as I'm reading it, is that I do know that a lot of districts don't have availability, even in their region, of following up. And in your opinion, when it says that they have to send them to a summer school or something like that, what does that mean to you?
What I would anticipate would be required. And I'd surely be open to discussing this, but and as I've reviewed this, what I would anticipate that it would require for every school that offers K-3 instruction, every elementary school would require one staff member, one literacy person to allow for smaller groups, to allow for that intensive monitoring, to allow for the summer programs, and to do all of those things. I'm not sure how to get to those without an additional staff member.
I specifically meant sending them to summer school, because I know a lot of districts don't have summer school.
Right.
So the ones that don't have summer school, do they have to spend money to send them somewhere else or spend money to have a summer school?
Through the chair, I would anticipate that if they don't offer summer school, they don't require a student to go somewhere else. But with this, they would be required to have a summer school. So I would think from my time in the elementary schools that it would just require a stipend for a teacher to provide a specific length of time for a summer program.
Thank you.
Representative Reinbold.
First of all, it seems to me that there would be tremendous long-term benefits. I mean, as she was discussing, when kids drop out, they are more likely to be on public assistance. They're more likely to be in our prison systems and things like that. So to me, this should save the state a tremendous amount of money in the long term, and that's what we need to be looking at. So if we already have certain programs on that you guys are doing right now, maybe we need to evaluate them. And I think we've asked for this information over and over and over again. What kind of programs are being used in the kindergarten through third grade right now? Maybe they need to be, you know, evaluated and replaced with some more effective programs, because this is extremely important. And then I guess the last question, if the school district could they be working hand in hand with somebody such as the Rasmussen Foundation to move this forward, this type of program? Because I know there's interest out there in the community, but I'm just wondering if it would be good for you guys to have either Friedman Foundation, Rasmussen, some sort of foundation, Gates Foundation, to move this literacy program forward.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, this is specifically directed to districts as opposed to the state. So we don't implement the strategies that are recognized here. School districts do. We allow school districts to determine what those strategies are. But partnering with other public and private entities is always a good strategy. I think the key would be, if looking at something like this to be in law, that we would want some long-term resources to make sure that these things are able to be put in place.
Follow-up? Yeah, and then to have the middle section, do you have an evaluation of the programs that you're using right now? Can we see them? Can we see what the outcomes are based on the programs that you have in place right now?
Through the chair, the state doesn't have these programs in place right now. The districts have these programs in place. We set standards for students to achieve, and we allow districts to determine how to move towards those standards. So we don't monitor those. We don't have those. So you would have to speak to the districts to determine what is in place.
And I think Representative Reinbold has hit on some key questions. Those are some of the things that we intend to be working on over the interim. So, you know, great questions, great answers, and hopefully during the interim we'll even have greater answers. With that in mind, Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioner Hanley. Thank you very much for coming. That has always been my frustration, to look at these fiscal notes that are a zero fiscal note to the department, but knowing that they're huge on the districts. This sounds like an extremely positive program and a really good way to move, but school districts are calling for reduced pupil-teacher ratio when school districts are increasing pupil-teacher ratio because of lack of funding, providing tutoring. All good stuff. Summer reading camps. The Anchorage School District is cutting summer school because they are not being properly funded. I absolutely agree with you, Commissioner, that school districts they need additional resources to do this. Ms. Vaught pointed out, catching up after third grade is painful and requires a lot of resources. Well, it requires a lot of resources no matter what you're doing. Extended school days, weeks, or years. I know we're struggling to find changes in school schedules in some parts of the state. Any of these things require resources. And an additional staff person per school. How many schools do we have in the state? Roughly 500 and?
About 500.
Okay.
Now, that would not be, not all of those are K-12, or not all of those are elementary. Mm-hmm. I've got somebody looking at that, anticipating that question. Off the top of my head, I might say it might be 400 mm-hmm. off for K-12.
Okay, thank you. That's it for now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Commissioner Handley. Social promotion is a term I think we all can understand. I think when I was going to school, there was not always 100% expectation that the student would progress from second to third to fourth, et cetera. Is there such a formal policy known as social promotion? Is it just kind of by default? And are there any costs to a student who might not be promoted? And I suspect there's lots of research into that issue, but just give me some background on the educational state of mind about the thoughts on promotion.
Through the Chair, Representative Sadler, I don't think there are any policies that say we're going to promote a child just because they're this grade, or this age, excuse me. But I do think there are practices in place that say, okay, how old are you? This is where you belong. And we do an initial placement based on a child's age, as opposed to what a child can do. I think when retention is considered in the schools, it's considered very seriously, because the impacts, if a student is not reading well, and it could be dyslexia, for example, could be a reading, they're very bright at math, their social studies skills and their science skills are tremendous, but their reading skills are deficient. Would it be social promotion to pass that student on and offer them support in reading but promote them to the next grade level because they are already proficient? I wouldn't say that's social promotion, but those are the decisions that are made by schools all the time. What is really best for this child? And we also know that retention is a prime indicator of dropouts. So there's a correlation between a student who is retained and a student who drops out. So you don't do that lightly. You don't retain a child. Especially the later in years they are, the more correlation there is to poor outcomes for that child, because it has self-esteem issues. Their peers are all moving on. They no longer feel they're smart. They no longer, you know, so there are those issues that are whole child issues, not just literacy issue. So I do appreciate the fact that this does has, and I have worked with other folks on this language that's come out of Florida in regards to the good cause. Retention, but a student could be promoted with good cause, and there could be a lot of things in place there that would keep someone from just saying, well, you're great at everything, but the rule says you can't read well. So what if you're reading at the 2.5 grade? What if you're halfway through the second grade? Is a child retained at that? So those are things that are to be considered in regards to retention.
Follow-up, Representative Sadler.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. So you're saying that the correlation is if a student is held back, that makes them more likely not to graduate on time or at all? Is that what you're saying?
To the Chair, that's what research says, yes.
Okay. And I guess I would ask, are there records in Alaska of how many students are not promoted in a given year? I guess, and I'd go off to that to say, on net, would you think that this legislation would improve the overall graduation level, or would the cost be greater than the benefits, or vice versa? It's kind of a tough one without some research, but just can you hear
what you're doing? Through the chair, if these things were put in place, these strategies were put in place, these intervention strategies starting in kindergarten through third grade, we'd see a difference. I mean, I don't think there's any way that you could, help a child and help a parent engage with a child and put these intervention strategies in place that would not have a positive impact. So I think that we would see the general positive impact. I just urge caution in making sure that when good cause is defined, that it really allows for promotion if there are other reasons that a child should be promoted beyond being slightly behind on their literacy skills.
Thanks.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you again, Madam Chair. How about additional pre-K, parents as teachers, best beginnings, all those things that we're shrinking instead of expanding? Getting them coming to school ready to learn would avoid, in large part, I believe, a lot of all of this angst beginning in kindergarten. If they come to kindergarten ready to learn, particularly early interventions for kids who are identified as infants as having learning disabilities.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I don't believe that a child starts learning in kindergarten. So any intervention that helps a child be successful socially, academically, be a well-rounded and solid child, and healthy child, are positive, have positive impacts in their movement through the schools.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Another little question for the staff, for the sponsor. On page 3 in line 20 describes, encourages instructional strategies that are research-based and then employed daily for at least 90 minutes at the same time each day. I'm not sure if that means that's not a research-supported element, or what is the importance of having that time at the same time each day?
Well, I just think that it helps a student to have a routine, so it was just 90 minutes per day of definitely a research-based strategy. Mm-hmm. If they can implement it at the same time every day, I think it's good for the student.
Thank you. And we do have two folks online and another bill to hear. We plan on holding this bill over the interim and kind of working through it. There's a few things that we need to look at, and at the end of the session here, we don't have the time, but we will hear some folks that have signed up. First, we'll go to OffNet. We have Bob Griffin. Bob, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I have two people signed up, Bob, so I'll give you 2.5 minutes and the other guy 2.5. That equals 5, and we'll hear the next bill. So go ahead, Bob. Please introduce yourself.
Okay. I'm Bob Griffin. I'm an education research fellow at the Alaska Policy Forum. I serve in this post as a volunteer and not compensated by any group or organization. In February, I published a report that I think you may have in your legislative package. It's called A State at Risk, and it highlights one of the urgent needs for improvement in student outcomes in elementary literacy. If you have that report in front of you, I'll call attention to the bar chart on the last page. It shows pretty clearly that there's a significant need for some action. Chart on the left shows, according to NEA figures, that Alaska leads the nation in per capita state and local spending on K-12 education. On the right-hand bar chart shows that we're dead last in fourth grade reading for upper and middle income students for the 2011 Department of Education figures, and we're also dead last for low-income students. Elementary literacy is a key component of K-12 education, and it's, as it's been pointed out, the Annie E. Casey Foundation has shown that third grade literacy is a very important aspect of high school graduation. Many people, there's a lot of research out there that people are concerned about not socially promoting people with their peers and the negative impacts that have. I would actually point the committee to a 2012 Manhattan Institute study by Marcus A. Winters that draw some conclusions about limiting social promotion. It employs a methodology known as regression distant continuity and takes a close look at students in Florida that have been tracked since 2002, and it looks closely at students who are very narrowly retained and the ones that barely avoided retention. So that their test scores were very, very similar. As they tracked those students on through seventh grade, it showed that the students that were very narrowly retained, the ones that actually scored slightly lower, significantly outperformed the students that were not retained and continued on. So I think there's varying research out there on the positive and negative effects of social promotion, but I think there are also good neurological science that shows that learning to read by age 10 is a pretty important skill, and that Lisa Vaught mentioned a little earlier that it's becomes a very painful and expensive process to try and teach kids to learn later on.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. And next we have from the Homer LIO, Elizabeth Downing.
Good morning. Thank you.
Elizabeth, please introduce your
testimony today. I'm so pleased to hear some of the discussion going
Elizabeth,
on this morning.
Elizabeth, could you please introduce yourself and who you may be with for the record?
Sure.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Downing. I'm Vice President of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Board of Education, and I'm speaking both from the Legislative Committee at the school district and for myself, because I have a piece of information to share separate from that, and I'll identify that as we go through. I'm thrilled that the Health Education Committee is looking at literacy and how valuable it is, especially to attain a good level of literacy by third grade. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I spent several hours with Representative Ledoux's brother discussing this very issue. And I believe on the same evening, I sat next to Representative Wilson's husband, where we also discussed this topic. Remediation plan outlined here may be best practice for positively impacting literacy skills. However, it makes sense to me that this legislation should instead direct districts to have a plan in place that's verified by the Department of Education to significantly improve literacy where needed, but should leave it to the districts to address exactly how to go about doing that. This prescriptive bill may make an excellent recommendation or a guideline, but I would, as a school board member, prefer that it not be legislated to this level of detail. One area of concern is the requirement of retention at third grade or special class that is fourth in all subjects except for reading. And I wonder, isn't this what we already have in terms of differential instruction in our classrooms? The American Academy of Pediatrics and Johns Hopkins University Center for Public Health both warn against retention. The negative impact is similar to the negative impact of a student not learning to read by third grade in the risk behaviors that are exhibited as the child becomes a teenager. You can imagine being a 15 or 16-year-old in a middle school with 12 and 13-year-olds. As a mom, I have direct experience with this. My son was ill when he took a high-stakes reading test in second grade. Though his score was on the border, he was recommended for a reading pull-out program for third grade. And while I knew it was based on a score on a bad day, I thought, hey, great, he'll get some extra attention. So at reading time, he would go across the hall and work on lower-level books. But then he would bring home the books that his class was reading. After a few months, we all saw how inappropriate it was for him to be in a pull-out. But now, at 16 years old, even though he is a straight-A student, he still doesn't see himself as a reader. He remembers that he had a problem when he was in third grade. And I think it's impacted his perception of himself as a learner. So again, I would just recommend that this bill be adjusted so that there's a plan that's required of school districts that will provide clear information that the legislature and the Department of Education and the people of Alaska need to have, to know that there are a number of things in place throughout our state to improve literacy. But I would warn against having such a prescriptive bill in place. It would have a severe impact budgetarily on our districts. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else online or in the committee room that would like to testify?
I would like to ask her a question.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Representative Wilson has a question. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I have a question. Do you think it, the fact that he was pulled out of the class and everybody knew he was pulled out, would that be worse than having them retain a grade and really be able to, of course, he was sick, so that kind of, you can't go by that maybe, but would it be harder on a child to be pulled out of class every day or whenever they do it versus just repeating a grade?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, no, I don't think it would be worse being retained in the long run in terms of the students' risk behaviors as they get older and their self-perception. However, there's so many strategies that have just been getting put into place in the last few years as we've all become so much more aware of the value of literacy by third grade, certainly the Best Beginnings program. I absolutely support the concept of pre-K that's universal and voluntary, that can make a huge impact on literacy into kindergarten, first, and second grade. One of the things we found with pre-K was that the students who had our pre-K programs that were Title I eligible no longer needed special pullouts in kindergarten, first, and second grade. They didn't need the typical Title I support because they had pre-K. We're just beginning statewide to do more of this. We're not doing enough, but I think we're going to see a huge impact on these numbers for the fourth grade NAEP over the next few years.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we'll once again ask if there's anybody online or in the committee room that would like to testify. With that, we'll keep testimony open for the next session, and we'll move on to the next bill. The next bill will hold House Bill 197. Representative Wilson.
I would like to make a comment before
Please
you
do
that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I used to be a school nurse for several years, and I can invariably, and I have no idea how this affects, but at that time, and this was in North Carolina, and at that time, it was not unusual if a child needed to be held behind, you know, that they would, that would happen. And when I would ask kids what grade they would be in, just them, the child themselves would say, well, I'm in second grade, but I really am supposed to be in third grade. They would always say that. I mean, so I know that it is a stigma on kids because they would always volunteer that without me asking or anything. If I would say, what grade are you in? They would say, well, I'm really supposed to be in da-da-da-da, you know. And so that tells me that this is a big deal for kids if we hold them back a grade, and if there's anything that we can do to prepare. I like this bill, and I really think that it's there's a lot of good things in it, and I think that if the schools are doing their job, and if they don't have a program in place that is getting from kindergarten on up, because kids nowadays are learning how, some of them know how to read before they get to school. And it's amazing to me. And so I think that every single school should have a plan, and they should know right away which kids need that help, and right away before they get to the point where they have to be held behind. Every teacher should know that in her classroom she needs to work more with certain kids. So I do want to make that comment. I like the bill, and I think it possibly could make some changes, but I like the bill, and I think there's a lot of room for our schools to make some changes in areas like this.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Any other comments before we move along? Okay, we'll hold House Bill 197, and we'll move to the next one in the next 20 minutes here. We have House Bill 189, and we'd like to ask the bill sponsor and or his staff to join us, present the bill. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jonathan Christ Tompkins. I'm a representative from District 34 in Southeast Alaska, all the little islands around Juneau, basically. And House Bill 189 is a bill that we're bringing forward that defines and adds hazing to the criminal code and raises awareness and adds hazing to school district policies across Alaska. This is a bill that's modeled on legislation that exists in 44 other states in the Union. And hazing's a problem in high schools and school environments. It's where a group of students that have power and seniority use that power and seniority to sort of coerce other students through, and at times, really unpleasant and activities that can hurt and harm the students emotionally and physically. And I've seen it in high school as a student. Not too long ago, I was in high school. And it does not inspire a pleasant association. So we're trying to bring Alaska on board with the 44 other states and identify this as a problem. And we've been working with a number of different organizations, Alaska Association of Student Governments, which is the Association of High School Student Governments in Alaska, the School Board Association, Alaska Student Activities Association, to work on this legislation. And we're also trying to see this through as quickly as we can. And Senator Fairclough is carrying a companion bill in the Senate, Senate Bill 91, which I believe just cleared Senate Education this morning. So that's House Bill 189 in a nutshell. And with me is Tilly McLaughlin, who's the brains behind House Bill 189.
And it's my understanding there's a CS, and if we could get somebody to move that CS forward, we can speak to it.
Sure.
You can read the writing.
Okay, I move committee substitute for House Bill 189, version O, be adopted.
I object. Well, that's all right. I guess I don't object. Yeah.
So with no objection, we'll move it forward. And please have your staff introduce themselves and for the record, and move on with the bill.
Sure. This is Tully McLaughlin, staff to Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins. Maybe I'll just call to your attention a couple of things that we changed in the CS. There's been a number of differences which I think merit looking at briefly. These changes are ones that are, so the first one is if you look at section 1, line 6, it says substantial risk of serious physical injury. Previously, that was just risk of physical injury, and that language was updated to reflect the language for reckless endangerment. So reckless endangerment is a Class A misdemeanor, as is hazing, as we've defined it, and so we wanted to have the language be equal there between the two. Another important change is that we've removed the felony. We had a felony charge in here if it resulted in death. We removed the Class B felony. We talked extensively with the Attorney General and Assistant Attorney General, and they thought that any crime that involved that level of harm to somebody would be covered by current criminal law. There was originally in Section 1, Subsection B, the language normal and customary, and we revised that to say that the section does not apply to an act that arises from conduct that is reasonably expected to occur when participating in athletic, physical education, military training, or similar programs. So this has to do with a military program or an athletic program, something that you can, you know, if you're going on a five-mile run with an ROTC officer training program, if that's part of the program, you can't claim that you're being hazed simply because you're going on a tough run. And to make that distinction there. And then looking towards the, if you look towards Section 7, one change we made in this CS is regarding failure to report. It says that a school employee, student, volunteer who has witnessed or has reliable information about an act of hazing is required to report the incident to the appropriate school official. We added language to say that failure to report will result in appropriate disciplinary action that wasn't previously in statute. And then finally, at the end of the bill, you'll notice there's a definition in Criminal Code Title 11 and a definition, a more expansive definition in Title 14. And we made similar changes to the definition at the end to match some of the changes we made in the criminal section at the beginning. And the two I would point to are Section 10, this is page 3, line 31, where it says an act knowingly committed. Previously that read an intentional act, and we put the word knowingly in there to match the first page when we say a person knowingly engages in an act. And then on the final page, page 4, line 4, when it says an act or situation that is reasonably expected to occur, that also had previously read normal and customary. So we made that conforming change as well. So that's a lot to put before you, seeing as you haven't seen this bill before, but that's an overview of the changes that we made in the last week or so with the CS.
Representative Reinbold.
Okay. First, thank you for bringing this forward. I think it's important to address. However, it's caused me to be a little bit curious. First of all, I want to know if there's any specific examples that you guys know of. And also, is this in Alaska more elementary, middle, high, college, or above college, I guess? And then across the state, is there any statistics of one area being higher than another?
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, I can address that. There are examples of hazing. We were speaking with the police department in Sitka, and just recently, a number of seniors, for whatever reason, because there's no good reason for doing this, tied up a number of underclassmen to trees at the end of the road and left them there. Fortunately, the knots weren't strong enough to hold them, but that's an example. We did a survey among students in Manishcomb High School, which is in Sitka. This was actually brought to us by a teacher at Manishcomb High School who felt that this legislation would be really important. And of the students who completed the survey, there were a number of incidences of hazing. In Juneau, there was an article in the Empire a while ago about students coming back from a wrestling tourney and being kept out in the cold and being treated such that they had welts on their body from, I guess, sort of untoward physical interaction with upperclassmen. And nationwide, hazing, gosh, I think the statistic is half of students, 47%, experience hazing in high school. So to get to the second part of your question, it happens mostly at the high school level, I guess also at the college level too, but especially high school, or at least that's how the statistics bear out.
Representative Ledoux.
Okay, a couple of those examples. I mean, you say the students who were tied to the tree, Well, that's assault. Why would you need a bill for hazing when somebody's committed an assault on somebody? Anything in which there is an unwanted touching, an actual physical touching of somebody, would already be included in the criminal code as an assault or a battery.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, there are two parts to this bill. There's the criminal part, which you're addressing in your question, and there's the section that has to do with statute on education. Clearly, assault is always an option to a prosecutor. The purpose of inserting hazing at all in criminal code is to define it clearly on behalf of the state as a social wrong and as an act which we are saying is wrong. Clearly defining it, we've removed the felony charge for specifically that reason. We thought that things like assault, manslaughter, homicide are all covered under that. But we wanted to be clear that hazing is a crime as defined specifically for the initiation into or affiliation with a student group, and thought it merited its own definition in criminal law.
Can I follow up?
Please do.
Give me an example of hazing which would not be, that would be covered under your bill, but would not be a crime under current criminal code.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I can't think of one off the top of my head. I think that the incidents of hazing are going to fall under any number of possible crimes if they're that serious. And the Class A misdemeanor is the same as, I think, second-degree assault. It's the same punishment as second-degree assault. So you could clearly find that match there. The criminal definition we offer in Section 1 is more restrictive than the definition we offer in the final section of the bill. Section 10, for the purpose of school districts and schools addressing this in a disciplinary way with students. I think that your point is well taken, but I reiterate the fact that it's 44 other states have found this important enough that although there is assault that can be, it can apply, the majority of states in the country have found it reasonable to include this as a criminal act.
I mean, I get it as far as the school district is concerned. I just don't see, as far as the criminal code is concerned, if it's already covered in the criminal code, why we're covering it in a different way.
I think, Representative Ledoux, through the chair, if I may, one of the aspects of defining hazing in the criminal code that I think is especially important is hazing is especially insidious and coercive from my perspective, because you have a sort of a power asymmetry, and you have people with power, upperclassmen, who are subjecting underclassmen to something unpleasant. And sometimes they do it with the underclassman's consent, because the underclassman wants to be initiated into the activity. And this definition of hazing that we'd be adding as a misdemeanor addresses that specifically. And if you just have a blanket charge of assault, I mean, that can get confusing. Students might not feel as though they have an avenue to seek redress through whether it's through their school district or more formally through the courts, because they may have been coerced into giving consent. And I mean, I think that's the crux of hazing, why it is so insidious, is because students are coerced because they really want to be on the varsity basketball team or the varsity wrestling team or whatever to go through with it. And this speaks to that directly.
And I'll just add to that, Representative Ledoux, through the chair. If you look at Section 1, Subsection C, it specifically addresses this. This is not simply intent, but it's within the language of the bill. We say it's not a defense to say that the person that you were hazing consented to the act.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I have a series of questions.
Let's do it.
Okay. Thank you. First of all, the only difference that I can see in on page one in D when it says what an organization means, I don't quite understand. The only difference in the between the definition of organization there and the definition on the last page is that you have added connected with an elementary, junior high, or secondary school. I think that's the only difference. And I don't know why you have to even signify a difference overall. But that's just something for you to think about. That's the only thing. Those are the only words that are different. And I would think that that could be overall for the whole bill. But so that's one point that I think you need to look at a little bit. Maybe, I mean, you did say that you wanted it to be, but I don't know why it should be any different for anywhere. Because you're already saying in the first one that it is an association, corporation, order society, cooperative, club, service group, social group, faith-based group, athletic team, or similar group whose members are primarily students. I would think that that would include schools, all kinds of schools, but that's. And I don't know if you want to respond to that right there or not.
Sure, Representative Wilson, through the chair. I think I can address that. The reason that definition is specific to elementary, junior high, and secondary schools in Section 10 is because it applies to school district policy. So there wouldn't be collegiate students that would apply to, because this is just school districts. So this is language from LegLegal, and because it's just school district policy, they just mentioned the kinds of schools that would be in a school district.
All right, and then a follow-up?
Please.
Can I follow up with my...
Follow up with your follow-up.
Okay. Okay, and then you say on page two that it, number E at the top, line three, it's a Class A misdemeanor, sorry. And misdemeanor. And so what happens if that is... in court, what would happen to somebody if that took place?
Let's see. Class A misdemeanors,
through the chair, Representative Wilson, that Class A misdemeanors are punishable by up to a year in prison, but I think that's the maximum sentence.
So they would, and then I'm following through with that on page... page 3, line 16, failure to report, and this is for the person that saw it, failure to report shall result in appropriate disciplinary action. Gosh, my tongue is tied today. What is appropriate disciplinary action?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, everything after Section 1 is pertaining to school district policy, and disciplinary action that's referred to there is taken by either the district or the school.
So would you, are you saying that schools have to have policies in place so that people would know what would happen, or is this just up for grabs so that if something happened to someone, then they decide what they're going to do with them?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, that's exactly right. We earlier in the bill, it addresses that. I'll just read Section 2. We've added the word hazing so that the statute would read, each school district shall adopt a policy that prohibits the hazing, harassment, intimidation, bullying of any student. So school districts should adopt a policy that addresses this, and one would think addresses what the proper disciplinary approach would be for a student who undertook any of these activities.
Okay.
And you know, I'm just going to hold up on questions for a minute because we do have limited time and we have some people waiting online, and I want to make sure we get them, and then we can go back to this if we have that time. So with the bill sponsors, okay, can we go on? Could we go to OffNet? And we have Jeff Mittman from ACLU. Are you there?
I am, Madam Chair.
And Jeff, if you'll introduce yourself for the record And please let me remind you, we do have a few minutes, and we'd like to be sure we have about four or five folks, so, you know, as briefly as possible. Please go ahead.
Certainly. My name is Jeffrey Mittman. I'm the executive director of the ASLU of Alaska. We want to thank the sponsors and the co-sponsors for introduction of this bill. As noted, hazing and bullying are serious issues at schools in Alaska throughout the country, and this bill goes a long way towards addressing that issue in a very real and important way. It is for that reason that we strongly support sections 3-10. I also want to thank the sponsor and sponsor staff who advised us that prior even to our testimony that the issues we addressed regarding the criminal sanctions had been largely fixed, and we will review those in detail and return to work with the sponsor. As noted, we have some concerns regarding criminalizing student behavior, but anticipate that we can work with the sponsor on addressing those issues. With that, I'm happy to address any questions.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mittman, for weighing in this morning. I'm reading your letter dated April 9th, and I assume that that was on the previous version of this bill.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And next we have from the Anchorage LIO, Gary Matthews.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm Gary Matthews, Executive Director of Alaska School Activities Association. And I submitted a letter dated April 2nd in support of the legislation. Just encapsulating a couple paragraphs quickly, Alaska School Activities Association does not specifically have rules that prohibit hazing, but it is a concern to schools, coaches, students, families, and communities. And students have the right to feel safe in school activities during the activities without threat of intimidation. And many districts currently have anti-bullying policies in place, so it makes sense to expand those to include prohibitions on hazing. I'm not sure how many districts actually specify the word hazing in their current policies. And a question came up from one of the committee members. Yes, there is hazing in Alaska. During the past few years, there have been notorious cases of hazing involving student athletes in Alaska, some of them sexual in nature. We have been fortunate that serious injuries have been avoided, but it doesn't mean we should lower our vigilance. So we support the bill as amended.
Thank you so much. And we'll go in the room. Do we have Carl Rose? I did get the indication that he may have had an appointment at 9:30, so I apologize not being able to hear him. Bruce Johnson. Thank you. And Bruce, you know the drill.
You know the drill. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And we believe that this will shine a bright light on hazing. It's appropriate that happens. We have incidences very recently that have been reported in the Juneau paper and so forth that suggest that we do have young people that are submitted to, you know, hazing. And so we just want to be on record indicating that we want to eliminate any hazing. We also are supportive of the committee substitute that has been talked about here this morning and in the other bodies. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We are showing that we have Tony Newman in the audience here for questions. He's with the Division of Juvenile Justice. Do we have any questions for Tony? Seeing none, Representative Ledoux, would you like me to go backwards and see if we can get ACLU?
Yes.
Okay. Gary, are you still with us?
Jeff.
You mean Jeff?
I'm sorry. Jeff.
I am,
Jeff. Jeff Mittman, I'm sorry that we passed you up. We wanted to be sure that we got the other folks before we had ran out of time. And Representative Ledoux does have a question. And Representative Ledoux.
Okay, it appears, although I'm not sure that this is the case, that there may be certain cases in which there is nothing physically done to the victim of hazing, but it's a mental thing. So I guess I'm asking you whether, well, first of all, is my analysis that just like really mean teasing would be encompassed by this bill, and if so, would that have any First Amendment ramifications?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I thank you for the question, and in fact, this is something we will want to carefully analyze the CS for. As you are aware, the ACLU has historically taken the position that we must be careful to punish actions, not speech or thoughts. We are in discussions with the sponsor of the bill and want to ensure that the bill is drafted in such a way that it is interpreted to punish behavior and actions, not speech or thoughts. We feel confident that we can meet those needs.
Thank you.
And for the record, I'd like to show that Representative Sadler joined us a good hour ago. I apologize. And Representative Seaton has joined us. Representative Christ-Tompkins.
And Representative Ledoux, through the chair, it's an excellent point, and it's something that we got our language from Ledge Legal, and then thankfully it took the additional step to meet with the Attorney General to work on this. And this is something he brought to our attention. We were able to refine our definition of hazing in Section 1 so that it only applies to physical acts. So the language is substantial risk of serious physical injury and nothing more. And that the credit for that refined definition, which we feel is much more appropriate, goes to the Department of Law. Now, there is still in Section 10, which is district policy, a more expansive definition of hazing, but that's not criminal, and that's left to
districts. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm asking a lot of questions, but that doesn't mean I'm against the bill. I just want to make sure that we get it right. One thing I want to bring up on page 4, on line 1, where it says, to the risk of physical injury or severe mental or emotional injury. And that's such a subjective thing, because even in my own family, there was 5 of us children. And growing up, you know, we were normal kids, you know. But of the 5 kids, one of them thinks that some of the things that happened to us were terribly emotional, and the rest of us look at that other child and think, where is that coming from? And so even though you experience the same things, some people are affected by it totally different than other people. It's basically the same if there's an accident and we all look at different things that happened and we can say when we describe it. And so I am concerned. I agree that we have to be careful, because I think maybe people that bully or do something like that, if they think that there is a weakness in someone, sometimes they will zero in on that person and zero in on their weakness, and because they know they're going to react bigger than somebody else would. But that's such a hard thing to decide, because on a normal person, it wouldn't bother them a bit. But on some people, it's traumatic. So it's pretty hard to define some of these things. So I just want you to be cautious on that.
Yeah.
Representative Christ-Tompkins.
And Representative Wilson, through the chair, it's an excellent point that you make. And I guess I would offer 2 thoughts. The first is that, I mean, similar to harassment or intimidation, a lot of that can be, you know, mental and emotional, and we're leaving it to districts to decide whether they want to make that call. And secondly, I mean, you know, what really is mental or emotional injury? You know, it's so. And to give you an example, there was a well-publicized incidence of hazing in suburban Chicago a few years ago with a varsity girls soccer team, and you know, there was no physical injury or serious physical injuries, are, you know, the criminal part of this bill states it, that happened. But the girls, as part of their initiation, were forced to, bear with me, pour buckets of human and animal feces over their heads. And, you know, and we're not saying, I hope that never ever happens in Alaska, but that's not a physical injury. But, I mean, that would be emotionally traumatic, I think, for any human. And so, but again, it's, you know, to the districts to decide, you know. if anything qualifies.
Is there anybody else online or in the room that wishes to testify? With that, we'll close public testimony. Any other comments? Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's been enough incidences of bullying and various kinds of injuries, emotional or otherwise, perpetrated on students in this state that I think it's important to cover every definition possible. Having spent hundreds of hours behind closed doors with school board members trying to sort out student disciplinary hearings, I think this is another, as we've called it before, tool in the toolbox. And I appreciate all the experts that are looking on and helping zero in on non-duplication of definitions and simply helping us understand better why kids do this to each other and would they please stop so that kids can learn and we can move on with it. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And Representative Christ-Tompkins, I too have sat in those closed door meetings, and I really appreciate you bringing this forward. I think it elevates the conversation. It allows us to have the conversation and recognize what hazing is and that it does exist, and that is that it may not have physical injury, but it is bullying all the same. And I really appreciate you bringing this forward. We've run out of time, so we'll hold this bill, and thank you very much again for bringing it forward. And with that, House Education Committee is now adjourned.